Balcony's first ever year-round bourbon was an inspiration. It all had to work together. A blend of carefully selected ingredients, Texas-sized pot stills, and creative people determined to find the absolute best way to usher a new whiskey along. When you discover how it pairs with a meaningful moment, suddenly the feeling of drinking great whiskey becomes a whole lot more.
Hey everybody, welcome to this week's episode of Whiskey Neat, Spirited Conversations with Interesting People. I am your host, Christopher Hart, and this week we are on week two of our Los Angeles trip, and we sit down with none other than Sir William H. Macy. I don't think he's been knighted, but I'm going to call him Sir William H. Macy. We made a trip a couple weeks ago over to Bill's house. I call him Bill. We're close friends. And we film an interview at his house. We talk about Shameless, 11 seasons, that the show's coming to an end this season. We talk, of course, we've got to mention Fargo. We've got to talk about his obsession with ukuleles. We talk about a little bit of everything. This is just a relaxed conversation, a few drinks, with none other than the man himself, Sir William H. Macy. It could not have been a cooler time. We had a great experience, and then when it was all said and done, his house is kind of on the side of a mountain, and you've got all these. I think he owns a couple of acres, but it's like the side of the mountain. When it was all said and done, he went and he picked off some lemons, some limes, some clementines, and just brought us all this fruit to make cocktails with later at the hotel. He could not have been more down to earth. I mean, the guy, we talked about it all week, of just how surreal and exceptional and nice. And God, you talk about someone who's been doing this for a few decades in Hollywood. For him to be so grounded and normal and healthy and kind, man, it's exciting. So for over 30 years, Signatory has been one of Scotland's premier independent bottlers, selecting the finest casks of whiskey from over 120 different distilleries, from big names you already love to your new favorites you've never seen, and even legendary closed distilleries. We call Signatory the single malt scotch whiskey because not only do its bottles come from one distillery, but also from one distillation run and from one single cask, bottled without additives like artificial coloring and at cask strength. So when you pour your glass of Signatory, you're getting scotch in its most authentic, most natural form. It's the closest you can get to a warehouse tasting without boarding a plane. Signatory Vintage Scotch Whiskey is bottled in Pitlochry, Scotland, and imported by Total Beverage Solution, Mount Pleasant, South Carolina, and must be 21 or older to purchase. Signatory is made to be enjoyed, but please, please, please do so responsibly. Without further ado, please welcome William H. Macy. Cheers. One of the things I like to start with, especially getting into something, because we're going to be getting into a few things, is something light. Mm-hmm. So I brought an Irish whiskey. Okay. I don't know if you, what's your forte? Scotch, bourbon? Where did you get your legs under you?
Yes, scotch, bourbon. Nice.
A little bit of everything. So this is an organic Irish whiskey. They've been trying to prove that terroir is a thing. It's huge in a wine, yeah. But it's controversial in whiskey. So I figured we can get started with a little Waterford Irish whiskey, single farm, single origin.
I smell it because that's what the cool people.
That's what the cool people smell it first.
Usually, with a mustache. I don't even bottle it. I can't get the top off fast enough.
100 proof. Oh, that'll warm you up. So let's talk about Frank Gallagher. This is the end of an era.
Boy, that is good. It's sweet. Is this old?
It's not very old. I don't actually have the age on it, but it is very light, very pears, really very fruit
nice.
Forward. As far as Irish whiskey goes, I'm a fan.
Yeah, me too. I do like the whiskeys. That's sort of a new thing for me. I like whiskeys better than any of them. I was a scotch drinker for a while. But man, Whiskeys seem to... Whiskey or bourbon. But I think a good rye whiskey is my number one now.
I'm actually excited to try a rye whiskey that you brought.
Frank Gallagher. You wanted to talk about Frank Gallagher.
Yeah, so I just... You know, this is an entire generation, right? I mean, it's been 10, 11 years, 11th yeah. season, final season. What's next? How's it been? And why do you remind me of every... every one of my white trash uncles.
Everybody's got a Frank in their family. I've heard the story over and over again. I love the guy. I mean, as I was telling you, it's a big leap to go into television. And I had worked with John Wells before, and when he sent me this script and the original, it's based on a British series, and he sent me their first season. I got halfway through the first episode of the British series, read the script and said yes. I've always made decisions like that really fast. I've always prided myself in being pretty good at reading a script. And I think one of the secrets is you got to read it at one sitting and skip the stage directions. Just read it so that you can see it in your mind's eye the way you will when you watch the movie. It's a good trick because it lets you know exactly what you're getting into. And I thought, this is great. And it was an interesting... pilot for us because my character was in three scenes and unconscious in one of them. So I didn't have much to do in the first episode, but boy, what an entrance.
Well, he's one of those great characters that they obviously found more for him to do.
Yeah.
Right. And now this season, and as well as a few others, you're narrating
there's a little narration at the beginning of it.
It's fantastic.
I think the writers have learned that a little bit of Frank goes a long way, and they've gotten really good at making you want more rather than saying, get this guy out of here.
Well, it's something that this is it, right? So what have you thought about what's next? I know the last couple of years you've really dipped back into directing. I got to watch, we talked a little bit about Rudderless off camera. I got to watch that mind F of a movie, and I have teenage kids. Watch it, but be mindful of it. Is it something that you want to continue doing? You want to get back into directing, or what's next for?
It's hard. I directed three films in a row during Shameless in our hiatus, and it was just too much because I ended up working year round, and I missed every single vacation, and it's just too much work. And directing is so hard. I had no idea. I'm nicer to directors ever since I directed. I even apologized to some. But I would like to do it a bit more. And Felicity, my wife, bought a book called The Iron Will of Shoeshine Cats. And she and I wrote the pilot. And we sold it to Warner Brothers. And they've said I could direct the pilot. So now we got to find a buyer for it. You know, Warner Brothers will see us through that. I would direct that, and I'm excited to do it. Yeah, I'd like to direct some more. I don't know if I can do independent films, the micro budgets. I'm too old
it's
for
tough.
That.
It's
yeah,
tough.
It's just too rugged for me.
Well, I watched Layover too. This week has been fun. When you grow up, and that's the great thing about being in this business as long as you have is you have generational followers, right? Like I'm 33. And the vast majority of my life, I've seen you on the screen. So it's kind of fun, at least for me, just to get to sit down and have a drink with the man. So I appreciate it. And so I reached out.
33, Jimmy. I think you're older than this. You're older than all of these.
Or younger. I'm younger than all of them, yeah.
Yeah, these are older than you.
I reached out to you, and then as fate would have it, you've got a really interesting backstory involving Woody Creek Distilling.
Which is why I thought you were calling. my wife grew up in Colorado, Little Woody Creek. Moved there when she was about 7. And we recently bought her home, her childhood home, and redid the whole thing. And I've been going to Colorado. It's right outside Aspen. I've been going, well, ever since we've been going together. So that's many, many years. And they're horsey, and there's a lot of fields there, and we were doing a barter with Woody Creek Distillers. They would hay the fields, and they would take about 3 or 4 acres and grow potatoes for their vodka. And last year, a little bit more, they came to me and said, how about you be the spokesperson? They're going to ramp up production. And I said, yes.
You're the face of a whiskey brand.
I look at this face. I could sell whiskey. Yeah.
Out of a paper bag. But
yeah, right. Okay, why do they call them bootleggers?
I don't know.
Because the first time they tried prohibition, about, I don't know, 10 states agreed to it, and this is before the 20s. This is late 1800s. And no sooner had they passed the law than people were walking around, and they would put a bladder down their pants leg filled with whiskey, and they'd go along the street, and there's a little hose, and they'd fill a glass for you, and they called them bootleggers, because that's where they kept the...
The whiskey.
The whiskey.
That's one of the things that this country has never been able to do right, and that's prohibition on anything. Like, it just doesn't work.
No country can do prohibition.
No, you can't on marijuana, and luckily California's got that figured out.
You've got kids. Just say no. That's all they want to do once you say no.
We've actually, so I grew up in a very religious household.
I'm so sorry.
It's super Pentecostal, right? And when our daughters came of age, I was like, you're going to cuss if you want to cuss. Like, there's, I mean, if I tell you not to, you're going to lie, and I don't want you to lie, so.
Oh, good for you.
I mean, that's my crowning achievement as the one improvement from when my parents raised me to when I became a father.
I have two daughters, too, and I thought a lot about it. What do I want to do differently? Because I don't know much, but I know this. If you don't make a different plan, you'll do exactly what your parents did.
And I mean, you hated it, it's...
Yeah.
Do it all over again.
You know that first time you open your mouth and your mother was speaking when you were talking to your kids? It's a sobering moment. So I made some plans differently. And, you know, I was starting to do, I got two gorgeous daughters. And as they were getting older, I was starting to do all the jokes of, I'll get a shotgun and put it on the table when the boys pick them up and say, if she's not home by midnight, use that on yourself. And then I thought, I don't want to do that. I got in trouble for saying it, but it's what I really want. I want them to have lots of healthy, well-adjusted sex in their lives for as long as they can, without guilt.
Even though I agree with you, it's really hard to hear those
words.
It's really hard to hear those words.
You know, if you can't get yourself to say that, at least don't say the negative stuff, you know.
Don't shame them.
Don't shame
them. That's the other thing I've learned as a father is I never want my kids to be ashamed for what's normal.
Yes.
And it's weird. It's an adjustment. But if you grew up in a religious household, shame was the leading cause of damage, of bad decisions, like going the exact opposite of what they're telling you not to do. I don't want to shame my kids. So no. I agree with you. I just have a hard time saying those words out loud.
It is really, really hard. It's weird. I haven't fully adjusted, but at least I don't say... the negative stuff.
Sure.
You know, I don't say I'm going to get a gun and chase the boys away. I just try to tell them to make good choices and be healthy.
As a father of girls, it's so much more important that they are healthy and that they don't lie to you, because otherwise you end up having a grandchild living at home. And
I'm pleased as punch to have girls. It's a good time to be a girl. They're going to rule the world. And it's about time. We need women to run this world.
Well, I'd love to jump in on your rye whiskey. Do you want to start with the rye? You want to go with the bourbon?
The rye is the one that
swoons you.
It's the nectar of the gods. So I've signed on to Woody Creek. There's the bourbon. I signed on to Woody Creek, and I've been hawking this stuff everywhere, and I've given it to a lot of people in the business, saying next time you do an event after the COVID passes, Let us do the event for you. And they said yes. And I've been getting good reviews from all the people that I send it to.
Oh my gosh.
100% rye.
That rye smells fantastic.
Yeah.
Lots of pine. So I
sourced from Colorado.
Colorado. So wait, are they making it? When you say sourced from?
Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah, no, distilled. Yeah, they distill it.
Everything happens in Colorado. The distillery is in Basalt, Colorado. It's beautiful. These German stills Can't remember what they're called, but man, if you like machinery, you just love it. They're two stories high. And Mark, one of the owners, Mark Kleckner, walked me through, you know, where they grind the mash and where it ferments, and then the two stills. And it's a very small operation. There's just a couple of them. I said, who decides what it tastes like? And he said, well, I like, and there's about three guys, you know, and you could see them going, sipping it and going, I like it.
It's actually fantastic. I pride myself on having everything. Like, I'm the type of guy that if someone's like, have you had this? I like being able to say, yeah, of course. I haven't had it.
It's really sweet, isn't it?
It's got this pine needle note to it. Mm. It's really nice.
Yeah.
I read somewhere that the creators of The Simpsons, you know what I'm going to say?
No.
No, that they have often talked about if they ever did a live-action Simpsons that you'd make a perfect Ned Flanders.
Yeah.
Have you heard that?
Yes, I have heard that.
Yeah, I think
I did a Simpsons. I got the shirt. I got the coat, which is worth its weight in gold. It's a Simpsons jacket. It's like a sports jacket. But I don't know what I did on the Simpsons. I think I said, hi, I'm William H. Macy, and then they all jumped on me and beat the shit out of me. I'm not quite sure what the joke was, but I think it was on me.
Yeah, I think you would make a perfect Ned Flanders. Is there? So I know you have such a breadth of your IMDb page is quite full.
Some of it's true.
Yeah, some of it. Have you thought about doing more in the maybe Marvel Cinematic or more cartoon stuff?
I keep thinking about it. To be blunt, I have a problem with violence. I don't like violence.
In cinema?
Yeah.
And I haven't had that.
I think we've gone too far. Back in the day, we'd say, hey, we're just the messenger. If you don't like the violence in the movies, look at society. We're a reflection. And for a long time, that was true, but it's not true anymore. You know, this whole thing, the guys holding the guns like that?
Sure.
Nobody who shoots guns ever did that. You know where they got that? Actors on television.
Pretending.
Yeah. Now they're imitating us. And I look at my daughters and I, we were heading to the airport a couple of years ago, and we counted billboards that had a beautiful movie star pointing a gun at us. And 15 of them. Everyone holding a gun. And I thought, enough of this crap. And it's mindless and it's fake. It's fake violence. I'll tell you what we're going to do. If I get to direct this thing, we put a character in there who gets shot and blows his jaw off. And he's going to be a regular. We're going to keep that character on and let people see what it's like to get shot in the face.
Oh, the after effects.
Yeah, and he'll get pneumonia and it'll wreck his marriage and what it does to you. I think that's what we need. I'm not against using violence in stories. I mean, nothing is more dramatic than someone getting killed. But 40 people getting killed is pornography. It doesn't mean anything. One person means a lot. 10 doesn't mean anything. So I have trouble with the cartoonish violence. I don't know.
That's like the John Wick films. You're not 100% because it's very, I mean, the body counts are insane.
It's insane. You know, a shootout between six guys in Manhattan and not a cop to be seen anywhere. It cuts out a lot of films for me, and they're wonderful filmmakers, but I've sort of taken a stand on the violence. If you're going to do violence, tell the truth.
Of the real long-term effects and the long-term the reality
effects
of it.
And make it, you know, nobody gets shot and gives a speech. You get shot, you go into shock.
Sure. And, so do you feel the same way about sex or drug use in the movies, or is it more of the just the? Because I mean, drugs wise, I'm pretty open minded. I think you even in the past have talked about you when you were younger have appreciated acid. Mm-hmm. Like it's something that I'm open to those things. I don't think that's nearly as damaging as maybe violence or.
Me too.
Or some sexual things maybe.
I used to see these the ratings board, you know, and they would you'd see a woman's breasts, so it had to go to PG-13. But
I'm gonna have a touch more if you don't mind.
I feel triumphant.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying the ride.
But then they would let something through that's got people getting shot in the face all the time, as if it's okay for the kids to see that,
but not.
But they
boobs.
Can't see healthy consensual sex. Whoever decided that needs a therapy. You need to get into therapy, because sex is good. Even the bad sex I've had was pretty good. But violence is bad, and I've never seen violence that was good, ever.
Well, I think that's a bit of a double standard, though, in all cinematography, right? I mean, whether it's television or the movie industry, it seems like violence has always been a bit more looser and widely accepted as
totally.
Fake, whereas sex stuff feels real, right? Sometimes you'll feel it, you know, your heart starts racing a little bit, and you see Rosario Dawson and Crystal, and you're like, Jesus, she's beautiful. And I guess that feels more damaging, right? If you want to control that sort of thing, sexual stuff feels like you need to control that more.
I think you can send out messages that you don't realize you're sending out if you're not careful about it, and things have changed, and attitudes towards women that were acceptable when I was a kid are no longer acceptable, thank God.
Sure.
So I think we have to be careful about that. I'm very proud of the way Shameless has dealt with sex. I think it's pretty doggone healthy, and one of the things is it's not such a big thing, you know? It's not so important. I was gobsmacked after the first season that we've got these kids who are underage having sex all over the place, gay sex, and there wasn't much blowback from it because it was sweet and it was truthful and everyone knows it's kind of normal. It's happening.
It's happening, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you've spoken on that before. The way that Shameless has handled sex has always been something that you it's been a point of pride.
Yeah.
I mean, that show has been, and I, so many, pardon my language, but so many fucked up things have happened on that show that you tend to forget them, and when they happen, it doesn't affect you as much because you've come to learn that's what the show, you accept the show for what it is, right?
Yeah.
And Frank's behavior, I mean, even at times, there's times where you root for Frank and you're like, I really shouldn't root for Frank. He's a garbage human being. But you find a way to root for them. And I think Shameless, I don't think there's been any controversy that I could think of other than just missing, you know, Emmy Rossum.
Yeah. Yeah. I miss her too. But it's not for everyone. I tell my friends, they don't call it Shameless for nothing, you know, if you're going to go watch it. But I think as long as we deal with things truthfully, I think the sky's the limit.
Realistically.
Nothing. There shouldn't be anything that we can't say in this country. Of all the freedoms we've got, freedom of speech is the one that we've got to hold nearest and dearest. Everything has to be able to be said, which is not to say you say it, but you have to have the right
sure.
to say it. And so, there was talk, you know, back in the days, are you worried, Bill, that Frank's drug, his addictions, you're making them seem pleasant for people and you're sending the wrong message? And I never did, because Frank pays a dear price for his malfeasance. It's Jesus.
Frank pays a very dear price.
Oh, God. Poor guy.
I think questions like that are a bit loaded, though. I don't think it's fair. I mean, Frank's behavior is so despicable that why would anybody... Like, when someone says, do you think it's going to send the wrong message? I think it's pretty apparent.
Yes, that I do
it's,
too.
That it's not acceptable behavior by any stretch of the
pull any still off of the last 10 years and think, is this the poster boy for excess? If it is, no one's going to want to do it.
Yeah, I actually forgot. Again, you always forget some of the screwed up things that Frank does. And then I found an interview where you were talking about things that have blown your mind a little bit, like you can't believe they wrote this into the scene, and you talk about making love to the grave of your ex-wife.
Yes.
And finding a way
I'm
to...
I'm a Lutheran. I grew up in Western Maryland, man. I went to Luther League, and sometimes I read these scripts and I go, what? Is that even possible? Do people do that? They're ahead of me.
You find a way to make it work, though. That's what's so great is, like, Frank finds a way to sell something so ridiculous.
Yeah.
That you just go with it. You just, you watch it, you laugh, and you just go with it.
It's been sort of the cornerstone of my career. I've figured out a way to make despicable people at least compelling. Jerry Lundegaard was the same way. He's a bad guy, but there's a couple of things. You know, we're attracted to people who are striving for anything, even if we don't agree what they're striving for. You get hung up in someone who's always working, trying to get something. That's very seductive. And I think at Frank's core, he wants everyone to have a good time. And
well, he's also very accepting of his kids' behaviors.
Yeah.
That's like, for all of Frank's faults, he has always supported whatever his kids wanted to do.
Yeah.
I mean, between Deb becoming lesbian or his son being gay.
He didn't care.
He didn't care. And that's such a beautiful aspect of Frank's character, is just the guy has so many things wrong with him, but when it comes to accepting others, it's the easiest thing for him to do.
He's hardworking.
Yeah.
He's accepting, as you said. He's got a great sense of humor. He's a movable party.
What do you mean by that?
Wherever Frank is, there's a party sooner or later. He likes to party, and he likes to laugh. And he's surprisingly intelligent. It's a genius thing of the show. Every once in a while, I'd read a script, and I suddenly speak Spanish. Who knew? And they're writing Spanish in for me. Or I talk about my second year at Northwestern. I didn't know Frank went to... That was in the fifth season I found out I did 2 years
at college.
Yeah. And they just drop these little bon mots that are... keep expanding who this guy is. It's been pretty wonderful. I found out Frank plays the piano. I didn't know that until they told me I had to play the piano.
Do you play the piano?
Better than Frank, which isn't saying much.
Gosh, I hate to see the show end. I really do. And I hate
too.
To, you know, like, I just hate to see I don't want to say the death of a character, but I hate to see the end.
Yeah.
I'll never see another Frank episode. I'll never see the gang again. I mean, I remember feeling sad when Cameron, who will be on later this week, Cameron will be on another episode. To think that he was leaving, and then he came back.
Yeah.
And it made me happy because I felt like there was no closure there between him and Mickey. And
yeah.
and we don't have to obsess about Shameless this whole time. I've totally...
people love that couple, don't they?
Dude, Mickey and Ian and Lip, man. I've never rooted so hard for somebody. Lip seems to be... because there was a moment in time when the first couple seasons...
he was going to make it.
Where the sister was the responsible one keeping the family together. And then Lip went through a lot, alcohol-wise, but then Lip got his shit together, and you've been rooting for Lip for the past couple seasons. Just, come on, get out of that. And like I said, growing up in a family, we were poor, dirt poor, in Pasadena, Texas, and to be the one that got out of that,
yeah,
you know, and then see it on a show and find the similarities, I'm rooting for him, man.
I heard a couple of people say that they'd, around season 6 or 7, that every time the Gallaghers or some of them would just get it together and maybe something good was, they would screw it up.
Every time.
And it just broke people's hearts and they had to stop watching for a while.
I got upset with the way they wrote, I don't know why I'm blanking on her name, the sister.
Debbie.
No, the oldest sister, the one that left.
Fiona.
Yeah, Fiona was the figurehead. She was the linchpin.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, the way they wrote her character into being so problematic, It was upsetting. As a viewer, you hate to see it happen. Frank's the constant, right? Frank's always a wild card.
He's a cockroach. Nothing
will ever kill him. Hey, everybody. I want to take a quick moment, take a pause in the show, and talk to you a little bit about Waterford Irish Single Malt Whiskey. This is an exceptional, different, farm to glass, grain to glass, single farm, single origin Irish whiskey that sets itself apart and does everything it can to prove that terroir in whiskey is a real thing. You can check it out at glassrev.com/Waterford today. Cheers.
Do you ever find, and I'm sure you get this question a lot, similarities in Frank's either mantra or, because you embody him so well. As soon as I announced you were coming on the show, all anyone could talk about is how you embody Frank in such a believable way.
That's a sobering thought.
Well,
literally,
it's a compliment in that you're a fantastic actor, right? You and your wife are known to be part, even within y'all's relationship, the love of acting is something you both share. To see you really embody Frank in such a believable way.
Well, he's a great character, and there's some symbiotic process that goes through if a show runs for a while. The writers start to write for you, and they, I guess, hanging out on the set, everybody, I hear phrases that I've said. I hear words that I really like. They end up in the script. Or I come in ranting about something, and then I see that it's become a plot point. So I may embody Frank a bit, but Frank is now embodying me too.
Yeah, there's some crossover. Man, this scotch is really good. I'm gonna have another pour.
What's this last one?
Yeah, so this is from, if you're into scotch, this is probably one of the most exciting independent bottlers. I would say the most exciting thing happening at Scotch right now is this brand. They basically, they go cask hunting, they buy from all these different distilleries, and they release them at cask strength. So what you're looking at there is, I think 21, 30? What does it say?
Age 20 years.
20 years old. And I believe it's a Glenkeith.
It's very good. Glenkeith, yeah.
Yeah, 20-year-old single malt scotch.
And you said strength. You don't like the when it gets too peaty.
No, I like peat. We were just talking about you want to do it in a certain order.
If you want to
do peat last.
This is sweet. This is
very sweet. Just. It reminds me of the Irish whiskey and its bright fruit flavors. Yeah, I'm a huge fan.
Scotch whiskey was made before writing. It predates written history.
Really?
Did you know that? They found these pot stills that are thousands of years old. They've been doing this for a long time.
Well, I know that the first recording, like written recording of Scotch was something like the 1400s.
I'll bet.
And that was like the first, it was something that was, I think it was between two monks. It was like an order of certain grains or something.
Yeah.
I forget exactly what it was. But Scotch is where I fell in love. I got into whiskey because of my wife. I started dating this girl.
She was that bad?
Well, no.
Oh.
I knew her father didn't like me very much.
Ah.
And I knew he liked Scotch. So I said, yeah, I like Scotch too. And bought a bottle of Froig. And at a Christmas gathering, we got to bond over a bottle one night. And
oh, you were in.
From then I was in.
All right.
And then we got married and we have four kids together and...
Oh, you have four?
Yeah.
Wait, are they all girls?
No, three girls, one boy. Last one was a boy. Two teenagers and two toddlers.
Dude, you're in the weeds.
We started over, yeah. Mm. Don't you ever miss that?
No.
I am so sad to think that I'm done. I got snipped, and it's so sad to think it's...
You have grandparentage coming, and that's great, because you know why? They go home. They'll leave at the end of the day. That's... I've heard makes it so much
makes
better.
It worth it. Makes it so much better.
So my daughters are now 18 and 20. I like this age. I like this a lot.
Well, they're your friends now.
Yeah.
I mean, they're
fascinating and they're so smart and smarter than me. And I'm really loving this age.
Well, it's got to be a different dynamic too. I mean, the older your kids get, especially as they become adults, just the idea of even sharing a glass of wine together and
it's
bonding.
It's fantastic.
I don't know if I thanked you, but thanks again for letting us come by. This is your house. I know people won't be able to tell, but we are not in the middle of the woods shooting this. Bill invited us to his home, and it is one of the most gorgeous piece of land in the L.A. hillside.
Everyone in California lives exactly like this.
Really?
Yeah, it's a great place to live. I'm sorry, all the rich actors live exactly like this. Did I say California?
Yeah, I was about to say, I saw a few people at one of the exits of not living like this.
No.
But, oh my gosh, yeah, it's a gorgeous home, and... yeah, so talk to me about the bourbon. What's going on with the... I know we've tried the rye. We love the rye.
The rye is great. The bourbon is 100% corn. And I don't know. I don't know about you, but bourbon feels so American to me. It's just so perfect.
It couldn't be more American.
Yeah.
I mean, I mean for it to be called bourbon and sold here, it's got to be from here.
Yeah. Where does it... It's got to be corn, right? It's got to be...
So, bourbon has to be at least 51% corn, but there are some 100% corn bourbons, as you're about to show us.
Yeah.
I think people sometimes confuse corn whiskey and bourbon. Corn whiskey has to be used barrels or unaged. Bourbon can be 100% corn. And I'm excited, because the only other 100% corn bourbon I've had recently was Iron Root, and it's very cognac-y. It's absolutely fantastic. Ugh.
You could drink this. You really could.
I'm going to.
You know what else is great about it?
Let me read
they,
it.
It's double distilled, right? And some places they don't do that. I was talking to Mark. These stills are two stories high, and they're gleaming stainless steel and copper and glass, and they're just magnificent. But they do the first run and a second run. And they take out the alcohols that aren't great, you know.
Right.
There's a bunch of alcohol in there.
The heads and tails.
Yeah. And I said, what do you do with the alcohol you take out of it? And he handed me a bottle. It was hand sanitizer. And he said, the cheaper ones that
the stuff you get denatured. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. That's got the hand sanitizer in it. And that's why you get a hangover that you want to kill yourself.
Let me pitch to you an idea.
Yeah.
I got it. So... you represent this distiller.
Mm-hmm.
It comes from the same small town as your wife's childhood home. A lot of history there.
Yeah.
Are you going to do your own bourbon through them? As you know, Matthew McConaughey did his own... He didn't call it Matthew McConaughey's bourbon. He called it Long Branch, but he did it through Wild Turkey. I think it would be fun to see a decent proof. William H. Bill Macy, maybe Cast Strength or Unfiltered.
Yep.
Some spinoff. It's still named Woody Creek Distillers. It's still.
Well,
there.
I'm still a young man. That could happen.
I think your own.
I did make a drink. We've got a drink with the rye. It's called a Smile because my daughter's name is Sophia and her boyfriend's name is Miles, so we call it a Smile, and that's a pretty good drink. I'm a big fan these days of maple syrup as the sweetener in a drink. So,
like an old-fashioned?
Yeah. A Smile is the rye whiskey and a dollop of maple syrup for the sweetness, an entire lemon, the juice of an entire lemon, and ice, and then top it off with club soda, and it's quite good.
Can you write that down when I leave?
I will.
I'll make it tonight.
And my wife wants one with less alcohol in it, and we call those grins.
I also heard another rumor that you were in the running to be Brian from Family Guy.
I did not know that.
You did not know that?
Mm-mm.
Yeah, it's...
I love that show.
Yeah, almost was Brian in Family Guy.
I'm... I did the other family show.
Yeah. Well, I know that there's a ton of rumors out there about you that are kind of seemingly out of nowhere. I think there was one about boomerangs, that you collect boomerangs.
Don't know where that came from.
Yeah, and there's all these... And I know you play the ukulele?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I played the ukulele a lot.
How'd that get
some
started?
Songs for Whiskey Creek, Woody Creek, doing this alter ego, Willie Creeks. It's great fun. We're going to record one soon. I did one, and they put it out on the internet, and it's about... the Woody Creek Tavern, really. You ever been there?
No,
Woody Creek?
No.
Hunter Thompson used to hang out in there. He rode his horse in. That was the second time they threw him out for 6 months. He ran for mayor of Aspen, and his office was at the Woody Creek Tavern.
Colorado is one of those places that the heat in Texas is unbearable.
Yeah.
And we constantly talk about buying a home. And I know Todd's got a, you've got a place up north, northeast, right? Mm-hmm. And every time we talk about it, it's either Oregon or Washington. Sorry, Washington on the, you know, the upper north, twilight country.
Yeah.
And Colorado. And the distillers in Colorado right now are making some fantastic whiskey.
I wonder why that is. I know, well, the water. Colorado used to export more potatoes than Idaho. This was back in the 1800s. So there's something about the soil, which is why they started with the vodka, Woody Creek did. But I don't... I'm
not sure. Colorado's killing it.
All the corn for the bourbon and all the rye for the rye comes from Colorado.
And one of your pieces of land, they're growing potatoes for the vodka.
Yep.
And I don't know, Stranahan's 291. I mean, Colorado right now is arguably up there with Texas in terms of their craft development is off the charts. Well, I mean, it's exciting, especially as good as that rye is. That rye, I 100% agree with you, is fantastic.
Yeah, it won a bunch of medals in San Francisco the first year it came out. So did the potato vodka. The potato vodka has a taste to it. It's, vodkas usually taste like what tasteless. You mix them with.
Yeah.
But this has a taste because it's potato vodka, and it's really good, especially with the aforementioned lemon and a little bit of ice. Makes for a lovely evening.
Hmm. So I know that you brought something special, which was a bit of a surprise, sitting in front of you.
The old granddad. I think we should crack it open.
You think so?
Yeah.
That's kind of exciting. You said someone gave that to you.
Yeah. And it's, everyone loves the price on it, $5.49.
$5.
For a fifth.
Yeah. Old granddad goes for big money now.
It does?
Let me rephrase. Old granddad. Yeah. Vintage bottles of old granddad goes for great, great big money.
Well, what's money? Money is not gold. I say we crack this open.
Let's do it. I'm excited. We'll rinse out. I'll rinse out a glass.
Yeah. We run these steps. That's our workout.
Well, I've seen Frank naked for the most part, so I got Frank's in pretty decent shape.
Yep.
Thank you. Oh my gosh. This smells insane. Here, cheers.
Cheers.
Oh my god.
It's not great.
There's this old glue note that happens and it's also lower proof. So over time, it's probably dropped a little bit. It's probably closer to 80 proof. But there's an old glue note with old granddad. It's not bad. It's definitely not
there's
amazing.
There's some other...
You remember dry old wood glue? You get crafts, you'd smell that kind of, like your grandmother's old wooden cabinets, and you'd smell that wood glue. That's what it reminds me of.
I'm afraid you're talking about hide glue.
What's hide glue?
It's the way they use it. It's an old glue that they used to use on wood all the time.
Maybe. That's what it smells like. That's what it tastes like.
I'm barely going to be able to get this down.
Well, it's fun regardless. I actually brought a palate cleanser. So I opened a bottle of ginger brandy. At the time, it was medicinal. It even says on
That's this one.
Yeah, it says on the front there. It says it's for flatulence, diarrhea, upset stomach. And I've opened it.
A disinfectant for the sick room or bath.
At the very bottom, it's recommended doses of wine glass full before bed, right? So, which is quite a bit.
Nothing has changed. A reliable stimulating cordial, tonic and stomach, STOMACHIC.
That's not how you spell stomach.
The best Jamaican ginger root sugar syrup pure grain distillates. Relieves cramps, diarrhea, indigestion, and flatulence.
So I opened it with Brendan Schaub and Coleman Domingo and Anthony Starr, and I thought if I'm coming back to L.A., I thought it would be good if we opened it together and took another pour. If anything, it'll help wash down this old granddad.
A sherry wine glassful after meals or as occasion may require. Oh, man. I can't wait.
Yeah, the weather's good, and you've got this perfect shade.
Yeah.
So just going through and tasting a bunch of different bottles.
Oh, what could be better than this?
What could be better than this? A cigar.
Whoa.
Yeah, you smell that?
Whoa.
That's ginger. That's real ginger.
No, I can smell it.
That's 115-year-old ginger.
What an amazing taste.
That's out of this world.
That is really good.
It's like syrup. It's like, I bet you could replace the dollop of syrup with this and that cocktail.
Totally.
Make a 115-year-old grin. And they're what not, do you call it, 150-year-old smile?
They're not wrong. Next time you don't feel good, drink some of this.
Yeah, when we first picked that bottle up, it looked rough. We had to filter it and replace the cork. And
oh, you filtered it?
Oh, yeah, we had to filter it out.
It's quite good. That's yummy. It's unlike anything I've ever tasted.
It's a what do you call it? An after dinner, a digestive.
Aperitif.
Aperitif. It's a you just want a little bit, just enough for a cake.
It's fun to do this. It's just like when you go to vacation in Hawaii and you start with a Mai Tai. It just makes the day so interesting.
You know, it's fun getting to a bit more of an honest conversation.
In vino veritas.
That's right.
That's Frank. Some of the stuff he says, he's loaded, but he's too loaded to not tell the truth.
Is there something that you wanted to do with him that you want to fit in before it's over?
I had a great experience. The guy that played Frank on the British series was in town. And he said, I'm going to be in L.A. And he came to Warner Brothers. And I was like a nervous boyfriend.
Really?
Yeah, I kept looking out my trailer. I was afraid he was going to get lost. And then finally, I see him. They had made him park way far away, and he's walking around, and I could tell that it was him. And it was like a scene from Elvira Madigan. We just ran to each other in slow-mo and embraced.
Was it the first time you guys have seen each other?
Yeah, never had met. And the British series went 12, 14 years, something like that. And it was emotional. It was just great. We shared this thing, which was Frank Gallagher. His experience was different. The series was different, but a lot, it was the same. And then I took him into the set, and he looked at the actors, and he would go, you're Debbie, of course, and you're Lip. And he knew everyone. Anyway, he told me a great story. Turns out they didn't do it. I misheard him. He just wanted to do it. But someone would say, when Frank was a baby, and they would go, it's hard to imagine Frank Gallagher as a baby. And they would cut to his birth. And Frank would, we couldn't do it because it would cost a fortune, but they would have to build
a vagina.
And it would have to be big enough. But anyway, it would be me coming through there with my beard and everything,
yeah, full, yeah,
you know,
yeah,
me,
yeah,
just coming through.
Looking
going,
exactly the
wah!
Same.
But they said, well, we can't do it because you'd have to make the hair would be bigger and
yeah,
everything
yeah.
would have to, when it, they said it would cost $20,000 to build the Vagicam. And so we never did it. That's something I really wanted to do.
Really
I thought that would
to.
Have been a great thing to see my face come out of there.
Well, you haven't aged a day in the last 11 years. You look exactly the same. But I thought you were going to say that you were going to get the actor to fit into one scene, fit him in somewhere, like maybe a drunk at the bar or something, right?
We didn't do it. That would have been fabulous. That
would have been great.
Would have been interesting, too. They use that Northern England dialect. And when you watch the series, you really need subtitles. After the first year, I couldn't understand what they were saying.
Did you watch? Did you continue watching with subtitles?
No, I watched the first season and got into the second season, and I thought, this is not healthy. I should not watch this. And indeed,
not healthy because you thought it would affect your.
Yeah, I didn't want to copy it, and it was so good. And as it turned out, we went in a completely different direction. They lost their Fiona, I think, in the second season. So they had to rejigger the family, and it was a different thing.
Sure. We've got time for one more pour, and then we can say farewell.
You know, sit here and drink for the rest of the afternoon.
Yeah.
I don't know what you're going to do.
Well, you know, we're not in any rush. We're not in any rush. But this is a... So I was trying to talk to you about this off camera. This is made in Texas, and it doesn't quite... Like, bourbon has its rules. They've got their laws. Rye has its own set of rules. This fits in a gray area.
Which is rum?
It's not quite rum. It doesn't fit the definition of rum, but it's made with turbinado sugar, so it's rum-like. It doesn't quite fit the definition of brandy, but it's brandy-like. It's called Balcones Rumble Cask Reserve. It's been its whole life in an Olorosa sherry barrel.
And where's this from? Texas?
Texas. And we actually picked this out. Well, here.
You guys in Texas, you're really bold when it comes to your spirits.
You know, we...
Do you ever think about the first guy that said, I'm going to eat the snail? What is it? How bad could it be? Or the first person that said, let's just let this all go bad and then we'll try to get the alcohol out of it. I mean, that was...
Yeah, I think about that every time I see a gooey duck video. Have you ever seen people eat those mukbangs? They look like clams, but they look like penises. They're called gooey ducks. Like, who thought, I'm going to bite that?
There's another name for it. Yeah, some people are really brave. Let Mikey drink it.
Here we go. Now, this one's a bit out there. Not as out there as that ginger brandy.
Do you have a big collection of...
Me and Todd have a pretty great one.
How big?
Before I give you the answer, let me justify it. I have a whiskey festival and a show on ESPN that covers spirits. So I kind of... It comes with a job.
So you're a professional degenerate is what you're saying.
That's correct. I have many frank qualities, but I'm a bit more organized. I think they call them functional alcoholics. About 1,000 bottles, but it fluctuates different times of the year as we're leading up to the event. It kind of spikes, and then right after the event, it kind of dips. Todd's got quite the collection himself. Todd over here has got a 4-story house, like a baller that he is. And you
live in one of the stories, and the rest is filled with...
Well, the whole fourth floor is just booze. Yeah. I'll give you a little backstory. Houston is home to the largest whiskey club in North America. And it's 10,000 people. And they're Houston adjacent based. I mean, it kind of bleeds over to Dallas sometimes. But, the largest single market group. And we do a lot of events. We do a lot of trips. Like, we'll go to distilleries together and we'll go cask hunting the distillers will kind of let you go through and taste through,
choose a cask and
we spend a whole weekend in Waco picking casks from this company.
Weekend in Waco, that's...
Yeah, a weekend in Waco. We get an Airbnb together, then we leave our wives who love us and understand our addiction. And then we just pick out our favorite barrels and they bottle it. They'll slap our face on the side of the bottle and we bring it back to market and the group just devours it.
I never considered that. That's genius. That if you could make money off of this, you could explain to your wife that you're just going to work.
let me tell you another story. So I had the idea for this show and doing the whiskey festival. So there's 10 years apart from our two older kids and our two younger kids. And we decided we were going to start over. But at the same time, I'm trying to convince my pregnant wife, let's start a business that involves alcohol. And we're buying booze and
she said, that's how I got in this situation.
My wife could not be more loving and understanding and now super supportive because this year's been very good to us. But it was a hard sell at first. Like, hey, you stay home. I need you to have back-to-back kids. I'm going to go drink and it's my job. And you can't say it's not my job because it's definitely my job.
Honey, I'm going to have affairs with lots of different people, but we'll film it. I think they already have that.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the thing, right?
So this is the
Rumble Cask Reserve.
Rum
wannabe. Sip slowly, though. That'll light you up. That'll make those whiskers dance.
What? Now it's smooth. What's the proof on this?
61.3.
Oh.
Oops.
I really like this.
It's really great.
It's unlike anything, isn't it?
It's so in your face. It's so bold. I don't know why, but the word Fargo just popped up in my head. Has everyone always talked to you about Fargo? You got to mention it once, right?
You have to. Yeah.
You have to mention
it's a
it.
Great film.
Great film.
It was tremendous on telly maybe 2 years ago, and I missed the beginning, but God, what a great film.
Have you watched the series yet?
Yeah, I watched the whole first season. I've seen bits and pieces of the... It's fantastic.
Billy Bob Thornton was first season, right?
Oh, man, he should have paid them to do that season. He was having so much fun.
Billy Bob Thornton, to me, is one of the most underutilized. Like, I don't know if he just doesn't want to do enough or he doesn't try out enough or, like, I don't know what his MO is. Like, you know, Daniel Day-Lewis purposely does one film, like, every couple of years. Mm-hmm. Daniel Day-Lewis is not in any rush. But Billy Bob Thornton did such an incredible job in season one of Fargo that it was comparable to the film. It was just as good.
Oh, he was fantastic. I don't know. Does he not work a lot? I feel like I see him pretty regularly.
Well, I know he's got a show, Goliath, I think.
It's in the second, third year.
Amazon Prime. But I just feel like I don't see him enough. It's someone that I always want to see and don't get to see enough. I mean, there have been times I've thought that about Bill Macy. But that's one of the great things about Shameless is you get to consume so much of it year-round.
Yeah, yeah. Sling Blade came out the same year as Fargo, so I got to hang out with Billy Bob because we were doing the whole circuit,
the
you know.
Press circuit, junket, yeah.
He's a swell guy. You're right, he's really talented. There's not much he can't do.
He's someone that, I mean, you know, Jack, our producer off camera, we talk about film constantly. He's someone that you just can't wait to watch. If he's in something, you know, it's got to be good.
He's driven. There's so much going behind his eyes. You can always tell that he's working towards something, and it's hard to not watch him. He's got a great sense of story and purpose.
Hmm. Well,
he changes
listen,
his look a lot too.
I mean, he's always got the right. He's always got the little.
Yeah, and he plays music. He's a big rocker.
How'd you get into ukuleles? It's very
Paul Thomas Anderson after
what an answer. What a fucking answer.
After maybe it was Magnolia. Anyway, he wanted to do a talent show because there was this guy in Australia who did the equivalent of the Gong Show. You know, he'd have a hook and pull you off. And the guy's very funny and very acerbic and cutting. So Paul brought him out, and all the actors that normally work with Paul, we did a talent show. And the rule was you had to do something you'd never done before. And Felicity and I sang this song. And I'd never played a ukulele, so I bought a ukulele and never looked back. I used to play guitar. That's how I got in the business. My brother taught me when I was 14 to play guitar. And picked up the ukulele, and now my guitars have dust on them. The ukulele is the crack cocaine of stringed instruments. Don't pick it up if you don't want to get addicted.
It's very Steve Martin of you, right? I mean, getting to the banjo, have you ever talked to him?
Oh my God, he's a magnificent banjo player. He's a serious musician.
It's insane. And I think there's an actual board that certifies when you reach master level.
He's that. He said he'd give me a couple of lessons, and in fact he did. I've got a banjo, but I don't know.
Didn't quite sell you like the yuka?
The ukulele is...
Yuki?
Just uke.
Uke?
Ukulele. It's a... The origins of it are unknown. It came from Portugal to Hawaii. And in Portuguese, they called it a flea, a dancing flea, because it's so little. And the Hawaiian equivalent is ukulele or something like that. And boy, they do play it in Hawaii. Everybody plays a ukulele. You can play it very quietly, and it's also a way of sort of self-soothing, I've found. And and you can look like you're playing something serious and people won't talk to you. You know, don't bother me, I'm creating. But it's just four strings, and the people who play them well can get a symphony orchestra out of the thing. It's, I guess what I love about it is you couldn't strip down the instrument anymore
than what it is. For those wondering, he's down. He's looking down at one on the ground.
Yeah. My friend Jim Beloff makes this one. It's got a plastic back. And it's got a great sound. Sweet.
It's really nice. Well, listen, I can't thank you enough for this. This has been great. I've enjoyed the 6 or 7 drinks I had with you.
I know. This is great.
Cheers. Thank you, brother. One last one.
One last one. Ding. Just looking at you. Thank you, everybody.
Balcony's first ever year-round bourbon was an inspiration. It all had to work together. A blend of carefully selected ingredients, Texas-sized pot stills, and creative people determined to find the absolute best way to usher a new whiskey along. When you discover how it pairs with a meaningful moment, suddenly the feeling of drinking great whiskey becomes a whole lot more.